Edgar Norton teaches personal finance at Illinois State University and is a scholar on the topic of behavioral finance. In the last segment of Sound Money, we talked a little bit about what behavioral finance is and some examples of how it might affect someone's investing. Edgar, first of all, why don't you give me your one-sentence definition of behavioral finance so we can let folks know where we're going here.
Okay, well, behavioral finance is a field of finance that examines how human behavior affects financial decision-making.
And there are different terms that come into play here. One of them is overconfidence. What does that mean? I assume that means that people think they know what they're doing, so they throw a lot of money and make ultimately a bad choice. Is that a fair way of summarizing it?
In some ways, it comes back to what we talked about in the last segment where, you know, if I flip heads five times in a row, what's the sixth flip going to be?
And I was absolutely sure it was going to be heads, and it turned out to be right.
Yep. But statistically, it's a 50-50. It could be heads, could be tails. It doesn't matter if you got five heads or 10 heads or one head. The next coin flip is totally independent. Another good example might be someone who wants to look at who won the Super Bowl last year. There's this folklore out there that depending upon if it's an old NFL or old AFL team, if they win, the market's going to go up. Otherwise, the market goes down.
I think it's the old NFL team. It's a bull market. If it's an AFL team, it's a bear market, I believe. That's the theory.
And that, over the past so many years, that little theory has a success rate of 81%. You could have made money 81% of the time if you invest the money based upon who won the Super Bowl.
So it's an irrational process seems to show rational results.
Yep, and every January you're going to see articles or hear articles even on the radio about the Super Bowl indicator. Well, people like to see patterns, and that can sometimes breed the sense of overconfidence that they know what the future might hold. And so many, many times we see that overconfidence is sometimes misplaced. For example, go about your workplace here. Go in the WGLT studio and ask how many people, are you an above average, how would you rate yourself? Are you an above average driver? And if you ask 10, 20 people, probably most of them will say, yeah, I'm an above-average driver. Well, by definition, if you ask 10 people, only 5 of them should be above average. And if you ask 100 people, only 50 will be above average. But, you know, we do these surveys, and it's amazing how many people think they're above average in driving or in smarts or in athletic ability or in, you name it, cleaning windows. They think they're above average in that. And so this comes over across in the finance realm as well, with the CEOs trying to bid and merge and take over companies. Well, which company takes over another company? Well, the one that may be paid too high a price for it, offer too high a price. And so that's known as the winner's curse. And likewise, in investing, we sometimes get a little crazy when the market's rising and rising and rising, and we think, oh, the market will keep on rising. And we get overconfident in making our investment decisions, thinking the market will continue to rise, like the next coin flip will be another heads.
But isn't there always that skeptic out there who's looking for the dark cloud that can predict and say, you know, you need to pull back a little bit because this is what's coming?
Yep, there are always the skeptics who are going to say, if the trend is up, I'm going to say it's down, and vice versa, and that's how they get the name in the press. And there are some skeptics out there I can think of who every year, no matter what happens, they're Mr. Gloom and Doom. They're always negative. And so if you toss away those people, you know, almost any year I can find in the financial press people that are going to tell me how great the world is going to be financially for the next year, and other people who are going to tell me to be careful.
So hindsight bias, is that an example of someone who looks at what's happened in the past and just puts too much weight into it?
Well, since I'm so smart, Willis, I can predict the future, since I'm not overconfident, I'm just knowledgeable. And therefore, I knew that internet thing was going to crash back in 2001. I saw that coming, and I could just see these real estate prices getting just way too frothy. I knew that was going to come down.
Yes, but if you actually go back to those times.
That's right. I can, with 2020 hindsight, I can tell you what happened and why it was going to happen and why I could have predicted it was going to happen if you had asked me.
But I didn't, so.
That's right. And so if something bad happens, it's always another guy's fault. Otherwise, yeah, with 2020 hindsight, I can tell you anything.
What is anchoring in the term of behavioral finance?
Anchoring is, again, looking at letting more recent history have an impact on your current decisions. For example, sometimes we're always fighting the last battle. If we're scared of inflation, think of way back in ancient history, back in the late 70s, early 80s. For many years, people were hyper about inflation because even though inflation was down, 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 people were hyper about inflation because they remembered that. And go back 10, 15 years ago, after the tech stocks crashed, people were hyper about that, and they stayed away from those stocks, even though that was the best time in the world to invest in the tech sector. And real estate and the stock market crash, and, you know, we're always fighting yesterday's battles, and so I'm getting a far field here, but anchoring basically deals with, you know, what happened last week will happen this week. I'm going to predict this week's because I remember what happened last week and two or three weeks ago, and I think the same thing will continue. And that's a lot of evidence out there. We have a lot of data out there showing how do stock pickers make their choices and their forecasts. And it's amazing how close the correlation is between what happened recently with the stock market or with interest rates and what their predictions are for the future with stock markets and interest rates.
This is a fascinating way of looking at your own personal financial decisions, and we hope that it's helpful to those who are doing so either now or in the future. Edgar, thanks for helping us out.
You're welcome, Willis.
I'm Willis Kern.